Blog Talk Radio.
Show number 56. This is October 21st, 2013. I am your host, Tom Riedel, and joining me shortly will be my co-host, Robin Eduardo. This is a show, of course, where we showcase new authors, and we'll be bringing Robin in shortly, as I said. And also tonight, we will be welcoming as our special guest, P.S. Bartlett. She wrote a very fine book, a very wonderful imaginative book called Fireflies, and should be on at quarter after the hour. And where you can find us is over at the Writer's Lounge blog at tomriedel.com/blog. And if you go to that page, you can read all the reviews and also listen to the show with the Blog Talk Radio Show player located up in the upper left-hand corner of the page. And, of course, you can go to Facebook, excuse me, and find us on Facebook over there. And also Twitter. We are on Twitter, so please follow us over there at Twitter. You can also contact us the old-fashioned way at twl11@yahoo.com. And our upcoming guest authors, hopefully on the next show, which will be next week, we're going to have on Kevin Folliard, and he wrote Lila Black and the Curse from Camp Coldwater, and he'll either be on next week or the following week. We have some technical glitches here that we're going to work out, hopefully, over the course of the next week, and hopefully he'll be on next week. So also, of course, we want to promote Magic Pen Web Design. Offers its clients a simple, effective, and affordable approach to website design development. Go over there to MagicPenWebDesign.com, fill out the free estimate form, and let Magic Pen help you to sell that next book with a website design that works its magic for you. And with that, I would like to tell you, if you'd like to call the show tonight, you can give us a call at 626-213-5613 or toll-free at 877-878-1436. And now I'd like to bring on my co-host, Robin Eduardo, from New Jersey. And also I would like to let everybody know that tonight I am doing this with the phone. So I am not on my microphone, so if I sound a little different, that is probably why. And like I say, we're going to work the glitches out. But welcome, Robin. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good. And you sound fine, so I think we can hang in there. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, we, you know, sometimes these things happen, and everybody's been really helping us with the show, and of course, I would like to, you know, kind of put you on pause here for a second, because I forgot to discuss something that's very important to the new format here on the Writer's Lounge. It's the TWL book promotion, and you can go to our Facebook page over at facebook.com, pages, the Writer's Lounge Showcasing New Authors, and find out what you need to do to promote your book on our show. And with that, I'd like to promote a couple of books, and one of our sponsors, one of our huge supporters over the last couple of shows, at MGMTA who is providing us with a lot of authors. And one of the authors here would be T.K. Harris, and he wrote Phantom, she wrote Phantom Dreams. And the synopsis of this is that the FBI special agent Jack Matthews finds himself on yet another serial killer case, having barely recovered from the last disastrous hunt, still stiff from a shotgun wound in his leg, under investigation for a botched job, and having lost his fiancée when she walked out on him, Jack is beginning to wonder if it isn't time to move on to something new. But for Jack, these cases are personal, and he can't say no. A marketing specialist, Kathy Gilliam, leads a fairly boring life as she's not working or caring for her ailing father, and she is doing whatever it takes to avoid going anywhere near crowds of people. Her few distractions include her friend Margot Longfellow, occasional hiking trips, and her increasingly alarming dreams of women dying. As her nightmares cause her to begin to doubt her sanity, the media releases news of the coast-to-coast killer, and Kathy discovers her dreams may be related. In a moment of panic, Kathy does something that places her on the FBI's person of interest list. Suddenly, her life is set on a collision course with Jack, who must decide if Kathy is the killer or destined to become a victim. So that was very interesting. And, of course, once again, that's Phantom Dreams by T.K. Harris. Also from GMTA, The Mirror by Candace Bowser. Adrian Bristol stood before her grandmother's antique mirror and stared at the black velvet cloth covering it. She just couldn't believe her Nana was gone. The mirror had hung in that exact same spot for the last 20 years. Never once had it been moved from the alcove. Adriana remembered the stern words of her grandmother when she was a child. Annabelle Bristol had told her, "Promise me, Adriana, that you will never uncover the mirror. No matter what it may whisper to you, you must never remove the cover." Adriana laid her hand against the cool velvet which covered the glass. As she walked away, the mirror whispered to her, "You belong to me now. You belong to me." A 400-year-old curse was plagued, which has plagued the Bristol family since the 1600s. Curse born out of love so rich and a betrayal so deep that time itself was no power to stop it. Only Adriana has the courage to find the truth behind the curse and set her family free. But will the mirror release its darkest secrets? Once again, that's The Mirror by Candace Bowser. And thank you again for GMTA for providing support to the Writers Lounge. And now, Robin, we can talk a little bit.
That mirror one really sounds, that intrigued me. I've always had a kind of a fascination with different stories revolving around mirrors or seeing spirits in reflections of things, whether it's water or, you know, about my husband with his Dominican voodoo stuff. With his family. For our listeners, my husband's from the Dominican Republic, and it's the same island that Haiti is on the western side, and the Dominican Republic is on the eastern side. And so voodoo is a heavy, very heavy influence throughout the island. And but with the Dominicans, it's very it's even more so mixed up with the religious, the saints, and mixed in with the Catholicism, and it's just everything is so different over there. But yeah. Anyway,
yeah,
I don't know why I got off on that tangent, but
yeah, these stories are very much part of Halloween season, and of course that's why we're having all these authors on now that sort of relate to the spooky, and I'm really
Or magic, or what do you call it? Like paranormal type of stories are always interesting. You know, depending on the level of you know, whatever our readers, the age level, what's appropriate, but there's lots out there, and this is the time of the year that's just so much fun for the kids. You know, get them away from the movies. I know there's a lot of movies playing, and I, you know me, I'm a horror fanatic, but, you know, let's get the kids involved in reading. There's a lot of really good stories out there. So,
then,
yep, that's my my PSA.
Yeah, as I alluded to, Robin, at the beginning of the show here, talking about Kevin Folliard, hopefully we'll have him on next week if I can work these glitches out. But he wrote a book, as I mentioned, Violet Black and the Curse from Camp Coldwater, and it's got paranormal in there also. And that
paranormal,
but it has a ghost hunter. And, of course, we all know what I do part-time in this part of the world here, the Midwest. And I'm really looking forward to having Kevin on so I can discuss a little bit about Violet Black, his character, and then also, you know, inject a little bit of the realism in what I do. So it's fun, and we've already done a couple of investigations here around Halloween, and I'm looking forward to a couple more, too.
Oh, you're going to be doing some in the near future? You
sure.
have anything
We're
planned before Halloween? Yeah?
Yeah, we have an event or an investigation coming up next Saturday. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to make it, but our group is involved with an investigation here in Minnesota, and you know, we're going to go out there and see if we can help some folks with some problems that they're having in their home, and hopefully clear them away, or at least find out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be fun. And rewarding too. There's a sense that we get when we're actually helping people, because a lot of people think, you know, we're just into this to find the ghost and prove that the ghosts are there, and that's not the case. The case is that we want to make sure that they are, that the family's taken care of, and that everybody, including the spirits, are safe and feel comfortable in their home. So that'll be something that we're going to be involved in. But anyway, let's see here. We're getting close to bringing on P.S. Bartlett. Her name is Peggy, and we'll bring her on shortly. But I want to talk about her book here. And her book, Fireflies, is written by P.S. Bartlett and published by Mythos Press in 2013. And you may purchase it at Amazon.com/Kindle. And, of course, you can visit the author on Facebook. I believe you would find her there. This is what Amazon had to say about fireflies. However peculiar Enos Whelan had been for the first 6 years of his life, not until the day he found the bird the degree of his strangeness becomes so tangible. Dr. Owen Whelan and his wife Sarah, both Irish immigrants, had been living the American dream as well as raising seven bright and expressive children. The youngest, Enos, however, has since birth been a bit of a mystery. Enos was always small, meek, and frightfully odd, but there is so much more to him than anyone could have imagined. His sister Tegan grows increasingly suspicious of his behavior, but their mother dismisses her claims until the day he starts healing people. And Enos ultimately reveals the gift of sight. He questions his father about visions of his past, including the voyage to America in 1844. Owen prayed he'd never have to share those tragic memories, but he will share them when he realizes he has no choice. Enos's life may depend on it. And here's what I had to say in my review of Fireflies. Enos has a gift, and it begins with giving a sick or lifeless bird the gift of life and flight. The powers within him begin to grow, and he moves on to healing friends, neighbors, and family members, as well as picking up on their thoughts, dreams, and life experiences. It's an amazing ability that the six-year-old is blessed with, and some are in awe of him, while others are scared for what it all means, including his own mother and father, who fear that what it is doing to their very young and innocent son. Truth of the how and why will be revealed, but not before a whole community is affected. This is a story that will awe you, comfort you, and give you a sense of a miraculous magic that is undeniably living within the world, if only through the natural wonder of a group of fireflies and a small boy. The author is skillfully able to weaving a story that takes place in the 1800s, breathing life into a time that many have forgotten about. Through courtships, family gatherings, and a strong faith in church and community, the author takes us back to a simpler time when things were much different than they are today. Throughout the story, the question remains, what is happening to Enos and why? But I was pleasantly moved through the wonderful storytelling that touched on all of the characters in the book and their remarkable lives and what it must have been like to live back then. For a debut novel, this was a spectacular, magically filled reading experience. It will stay with me for a very long time. I highly recommend that you experience this story. It remains solidly wonderful from beginning to end. And, of course, with that, I would like to bring on P.S. Violet, and also known as Peggy. And, Peggy, I hope you can hear us here on the Writer's Lounge.
I can hear you.
Hey, nice and
hi, how are you?
Clear. Good.
Yeah, so
well, I was so worried that you weren't going to come in clear.
Yeah.
I'm in my house soon, so that's the clearest one.
Yeah, good.
You're calling from Maryland, right?
Yes.
Okay, you're out on the East Coast with Robin, pretty much.
Yeah, we're not that far away. A couple hours.
Yeah. No, not really. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Peggy, we'd like for you, if you wouldn't mind, could you read an excerpt from your book?
Okay, after some debate and struggle, because it's hard to pick something from, you know, because the story gets going, like, right off the bat, so it's hard to get started anywhere. You know, I can't pick somewhere from the middle of the book because I don't want to give too much away. So I figured, why not just start at the beginning?
Yeah.
And
okay.
If that works for you, then I'll start at the beginning. And as always, I'm reading from the actual paper, you know, the actual book. So if you hear the pages, just, you know. All right, ready?
We'll turn them with you.
Okay. Ennis found a bird. He stood like a fence post, straight and still and about half as tall, cupping the small brown sparrow between his chubby palms and looking down in sorrow. Its feathers were softer than he had imagined, and it didn't try to peck him or escape as he'd expected. Its tiny talons scratched him lightly and tickled his skin. Its dark, blank eyes stared open, yet its body didn't move. As his hands folded apart, the bewildered bird sat silent between them. The air was warm and dry until a sudden cool breeze blew back the amber curls on his forehead, and he let out a gasp. His bright green eyes flashed open wide, and the bird took flight, startling him, and his hands fell to his sides. "Bye, bird," he whispered, turning his eyes to the sky and shoving his hands into the front pockets of his dusty coveralls. Late spring had come to Luzerne County, but already the temperatures had begun to creep into the warmth of summer. The sun still sat low in the west in the evenings, yet the days grew longer, which always lifted everyone's spirits, as did the end of formal schooling for the year. These were the days when the younger children would rush to finish their chores and race off to explore their own pursuits of happiness, which their dear father, Dr. Owen Whelan, always encouraged. Ennis, however, didn't need to pursue anything. It pursued him. "Ennis, is that you?" rang his sister Tegan's voice from inside the barn. "Yes, Tegan." She stomped out of the barn in her brother Brogan's old boots and breeches, carrying a shovel, and began walking in circles around him, full of suspicion. She stopped abruptly, pushed the scoop end of the shovel into the dirt hard, and asked, "Ennis, did you see a dead bird out here?" "Nope," Ennis answered and skipped off toward the house. "Ennis, wait," she called out, pointing at the ground. "There was a bird here, lying in this very spot." "It wasn't dead, Tegan. It was only sick. It's better now, and he's flown off." Tegan's brows lowered as she leaned down at Ennis in disbelief. I find it a bit peculiar that suddenly out of nowhere a bird that was either dead or dying up and flew away. What's peculiar, Tegan? Ennis asked, unaffected by her intimidating posture. You are, brother, but that is nothing new. Ennis had been born on New Year's Day of 1875 and was finally catching up to be average size for 6 years. He was a happy child, but at times seemed frightened by unseen things and clung to his mother's skirt. He was born frail and was still treated as such to a large degree by her. Sarah favored and coddled him. She feared him touched by his frightful entrance into this world, and his unconventional behavior often held her eyes open all night long. His first cry had taken many minutes longer than the rest. During his delivery, Owen feared him stillborn, but after what seemed like an eternity to Sarah, Ennis wailed his first cry. Owen swore this pale, limp infant, his lips blue, his small, soft body so still, would never live to see the sun come up. But like a miracle, he did. The next morning, when the infant latched onto her breast for the first time, Sarah peered at Owen with tear-filled eyes and said, "This is the last." Sarah first noticed Ennis's unique temperament one morning when she awoke to find him lying peacefully in his cradle and not squealing for attention as most infants do. As she stood over him, his peridot eyes brought her into focus, acknowledging her presence above him, and an innocent smile grew across his sweet, tiny face. She spoke aloud to him as she lifted him into her arms. "You've waited inside me womb for a long time, Ennis Whelan, to show me those beautiful eyes. I'll never be homesick again."
Well, it's amazing, Peggy, when you write something so well as you did there, that it's your first novel. It blows me away every time I read authors out there that come forward with their first book. And I know Robin and I are still working on our first book. So it's amazing that you did so well there. And I know that you're not, you're not in your 20s, you're not in your 30s, and you're doing so well.
Hey, watch
it. That's actually a testament that you're never too old, obviously, to write. Not that you are, but I think it's a good thing that we're able to finally get down to writing. But after that long-winded introduction, when a writer produces a good piece of work like Fireflies, there's usually a history of an interest in writing. Can you tell us about your inspirations to be a writer, and how old were you when you started to write stories, and how did Fireflies evolve in your mind?
I actually, when I was very young, I'm the youngest of 11 children, for one, so I have a lot of experience with growing up in a large family. And there were always stories there that you know, I wanted to tell, and stories that I was told. My mother was a great storyteller. I had a sister who was a great storyteller. And they, you know, instilled that, you know, the whole reading. Of course, when I was a child, we didn't have 800 television channels, and we didn't have all these things.
Mm-hmm.
We had books, and, you know, and we read a lot of books. But I started out as an artist, and I still am an artist. And I started to write and illustrate my own books in elementary school. And I, you know, would write the stories and do the illustrations, and, you know, either keep them for myself or do them for school projects, or, you know, give them away. And I'd put them together myself. I'd put them in a binding with construction paper and ribbon or yarn, whatever I had. You know, and those were the first books that I wrote. And from there, I've always enjoyed writing. I used to enjoy writing letters. I had a sister who was in the Army, and, you know, I used to write letters with her. She traveled, lived all over the world. But it all started there, and then gradually, you know, I kept journals and would write. but and blogs, but never, I mean, I always wanted to write a novel. I always wanted to sit down and do that. But life didn't work that way. You know, I got married.
Yeah.
I worked full time. I got my husband and I got married. I had a daughter. He had a son. Then we had another son. And so last year, this story just kept coming into my mind. I didn't know where it came from. It just kept, these characters just kept showing up. And I kept seeing this. It pretty much started with Tegan. And then from there, it just evolved. And my daughter and my son-in-law was in the Navy at the time. They were living in Virginia Beach. And I knew that they were going to be coming home in August of last year. And in early June, I said, you know, if you're going to do this, you better do it now. Because,
wow.
You know, once
nothing
because they had a two-year-old at the time. And I said, they're going to be staying with us with a two-year-old. Writing is not going to happen. So you better do it now. And
right.
So, I mean, any time that I was alone, whether it was in my car, whether it was laying in bed at night, I always talk about being on the treadmill because my husband and I were really into the gym at the time. And, you know, I'd be on the treadmill and these people would just, you know, I mean, you guys know, you're writers, these people would just not shut up. They just kept talking to them.
Yeah.
You know, you need to tell this story. You need to tell this story. And that's where it started. And I just sat down and the first thing that came into my mind was this little boy, you know, running through a field and he looked down and there was a bird lying there. And that's where it started.
Mm.
Yeah.
So.
It's pretty interesting.
That's amazing, and of course, you're one of the authors and writers who have experienced quite extensively here, as you just said, that the characters pretty much control you. You don't control them, right?
Absolutely. I mean, sometimes I would be, some things I had to rewrite in Fireflies, because Tegan is a chatterbox, in case you didn't notice, and she can go on and on and on and on, and she really wanted this story to be about her, but I had to pull her back and say, no, this is not all about you. It's about you, but it's not all about you. So you're just going to have to hold back a little bit and let everybody else talk too. So, you know, so everybody would get, you know, even though, and this was a star, you know, all the supporting characters, you know, had to have equal time.
Robin,
I love how you're describing this. I'm sorry, Tom. I just have to get this out real quick. I love how you're describing this in a way, like you said, you're an artist, and so your writing and your inspirations to be a writer really comes from an artistic point of view. And just listening to you speak about your process with the writing and all that, it's just funny because you're describing them and your characters almost like in a cinematic sense.
Yes,
and
that's how I see them.
Yeah, so it's kind of, I just think it's so cute listening to you describe them in such a way and letting them tell their story as opposed to you trying to create a story around them.
Well,
you know what I mean?
When you're writing and you're that deep into that, they're real. They're so real.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see them. I can see their faces. I can see their expressions. I can see their body language. You know, I can see the field, the barn, the house. I can see the bedrooms. I can see the furniture. And maybe you're right. Maybe it is because of the artistic background that I can, and plus I have somewhat of a photographic memory, even though I didn't live in 1881, but you know, I can see it in my mind.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm reading, when I was doing the research, there weren't pictures in those books and those letters that I was reading from people that were immigrants and, you know, things like that. What I was seeing was what they were saying, and I was able to imagine that in my mind as to what those things looked like.
Yeah.
And
Peggy, when you obviously just talking about it there, going back into the 1800s, with your story, there is a very rich, powerful, surprising backstory in Fireflies, which involves the immigration, as you just said, of an Irish family to America. I was just wondering, how much research did you do? Did all of this take place in your imagination, or did you get on the computer or go to the library? Or what did you do to take yourself back in that time and place?
I was amazed at the amount of information that you can find on the Internet as far as library files, historical library files. I mean, I was able to find actual letters written from people who had, you know, emigrated from Ireland into America or into Canada or to, you know, other areas on the East Coast, and actual letters written back and forth in their, you know, in their handwriting. Of course, they were transcribed, but they were, you know, they were amazing, and they were in PDFs and whatnot. Maps. I studied maps. I studied. I can't even tell you the amount of hours. I probably spent about as many hours doing research as I did writing, because I've always said it took me six weeks to actually write the book, but there was so much research in there. You know, because I couldn't stop. I literally couldn't stop. I mean, some nights I would be up until 3 o'clock in the morning, and I would you know, and it would be where, you know, I was starting to nod out sitting there, you know, but I had to finish that chapter. I had to finish that story, but the research, the amount of research that I found, I mean, is, and which I kept all of it, thankfully, in a file, because you know, the book I'm currently working on, which I won't talk about that, or that I actually just finished last week, is the prequel to Fireflies. It talks about what happened, where this family came from.
It goes back even further than the 1840s then.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Very interesting.
Yep.
It was a very different time for American families back in the 1800s anyway, compared to now. Cultures, mannerisms have changed drastically since then, from courting to the way we dress, eat, and relate to one another. And especially when you're discussing, like, Irish immigrants in the 1800s were not exactly welcomed with open arms. And, you know, and the religious also element to their culture. You know, are these things that you would like to bring back? Or and what makes you happy with that we left behind?
Well, I,
you know what I mean?
I don't know if I think that some of the things that were left behind are tragic. As far as the, let's just say the family aspect, the, you know, everybody, you know, I mean, of course, it's impossible, you know, to hold on to all of that the way that it was then. I mean, life is so totally different. Because there's so many outside now, so many outside influences. That will have caused, you know, tremendous breakdowns in a lot of families, including my own. And I think the idea of the family units, like the way they did in, you know, in the book, the way they held together, the way they stuck together, you know, and even though around them there were families that they knew, another family that they knew, for instance, that had a son who was not necessarily the nicest person, and you find that out in the book. You know, there's several, a lot of different things going on, but I don't know. I love the clothes. I love the fashion. can say that.
Yeah.
You know, just not to get too heavy into it. But I love the,
with all the hoop skirts and the girdles and all that stuff. And
the bustles. I want to see them bring back a bustle.
But you know, I just like the
I
idea.
I would be shaking my bustle.
Yeah, I just like the idea.
I'd be a bad girl.
I know.
I'd be a bad girl.
Oh, my God.
I'd be one of them girls.
chance of walking down the street swinging your parasol. But
yeah,
there's just, you know, I like the I guess you could say just the connection, the staying connected to people. And you know, and the kids all helping out, all being, you know, responsible for something from a young age. And I think that's why people were stronger, people were, you know, they didn't fall apart as easily, you know, they weren't walking around the world medicated 24 hours a day. You know, they were, you know, they were too tired to worry about.
People were very self-reliant and had to pull themselves up by the bootstraps because there was no social welfare system at the time. I mean, you know, it was feast or famine, which is kind of the whole reason why, you know, the Irish did immigrate to this country to find a new life. And, well, not just the Irish immigrants, but immigrants of all stripes and cultures. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's always an interesting thing. And especially in those times, when you think about it, how far we've come today compared to only 100 years ago,
mm-hmm.
you know, 100 and, you know, some odd years ago.
Right.
It's just amazing.
Most of so around the time, you know, that Owen mm-hmm. arrived in Philadelphia, it was just, you know, more or less the beginnings of the Industrial Revolution and all these things happening. And, you know, there was so much going on. But, you know, he longed for that quiet country life, which is why, you know, but we'll find all that out in the next book. I can't tell you that.
Yeah,
okay.
And Peggy, as I said, in order for you to pull together the time period and the intellect and the mannerisms and the way the Irish talk, I know they say me a lot, and I find that fascinating and fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really like that, and it's amazing how well you did with that book. And I didn't mention it in my review, and I did mention it to you in a chat, and I really mean this, that over the course of the last probably 2.5 years that I've been doing the Writer's Lounge, I, of course, have interviewed, right now it's our 56th show, so we've had a lot of authors on here. And I was thinking back to what would be the top 5 books that I've reviewed on the Writer's Lounge and the authors that are connected to those books, of course. And I would say, without a doubt, you were right up there in those top 5. And I've also said that some of the authors that we've had on, Brian Anderson is one, there's a few others who have actually made it big time, or at least moving into the big time as far as being in a bestsellers list. But I would say that your book stands a very good chance of launching into that bestseller market. If it hasn't already, I know you've gotten some very good reviews. But getting back to the character development, as you just talked about, and how they sort of take over your mind and tell you what to put on the page, I'm wondering how much do those characters change from the conception the end product, and who is your favorite character in Fireflies?
They really didn't change at all, because when I wrote the book, I did a light outline of the book. I don't like to, I'm not the kind of person that says, okay, this chapter, this is going to happen, and this chapter, this is going to happen, and this, I can't do that. My brain doesn't work that way. But what I do is I'm very, very meticulous about the characters in the book. For instance, when I was more or less outlining the characters, putting that together. Tegan, for instance, I knew Tegan was going to be, you know, a force in this book. You know, she was going to be a major character. And I more or less designed, you know, who she was and what she was going to be before I started writing, but I never realized how you know, she was just going to, you know, more or less jump out at me the way she did, you know, with her wants and her desires for her future, and that she wasn't going to be a conventional woman. She didn't want anything to do with that. You know, why couldn't she have a husband? Why couldn't she have a, you know, be a doctor? Why couldn't she go to college? She, you know, there was no reason for her not to be except for the fact that she was a girl. And she wasn't going to tolerate that. So she said, I'm sorry, I don't care what year this is. I'm going to do what I want to do. And, you know, but each of the characters, I wrote out their what their main personality traits were. And I'll tell you how that happened was I looked up old Irish names and the definitions of those names, what they mean. And each one of those names fits the definition, the old Irish definition of that name to a T. So look up the name Tegan or Fagan or Ennis or any of those names, you will find the definition closely related to the characteristics of that particular character and the traits.
That's amazing. You think there is anything paranormal going on here?
I don't know. I wondered about it, believe me, because I have a lot more loved ones on that side than I do on this side. So who knows?
Yeah.
You never know.
Well, there is a religious element in your story. So do these religious beliefs align with your real life? And do you believe there are innocent healers out there like Ennis?
I don't disbelieve anything. I think that, you know, having belief or faith in anything is something that you live every day. It's not something that you suddenly reach for when you need it, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay, and I've never been what I would consider a religious person. The reason the religion played such a very large role in this book, which some people have had an issue with, believe it or not, is that during this time in our history, that was how life was.
Oh, yeah.
Religion played a very big part, not only in Ireland, but in the United States, or let's just say in America during that time.
Mm-hmm.
The country started that way. Whether it be
I can't hear. Would gather together in the church every Sunday. It wasn't just to hear the preacher. It was to
it was a social gathering.
Social gathering. So
right, and you know, I've never tried to defend anything in this book except for you know, I think maybe. I don't know. I may have once or twice, but I got to the point where I was like, you know what? I already told the story I wanted to tell. I don't write for to please anybody, or I'm never going to do that. I'm trying to stick to what the history was, stick to the way the family was, the families lived, and I'm telling the story that the characters are asking me to tell. I can't, you know, there's a lot of my heart and my soul and you know, whatever in there. But at the same time, and my own life experience, but at the same time, if I'm going to stay true to these people that lived back in 1881, what am I going to say? They went to the mall on Sunday?
Yeah. Oh, it was a cornerstone of our foundation. I mean, there's a whole reason why. I mean, point blank, there's a reason why we have In God We Trust on our dollar bills. You know,
exactly.
I mean, it's just part of whether we are religious or not individually, our nation, you know, was founded on, partly on religious principles.
Right.
And it was a huge element. So, I mean,
that's
good that you acknowledge that and use that as part of the story. It is important.
Yeah, it was the church, especially in the rural areas, the cornerstone of the entire communities, as it was in this story. However, you know, there's so much more to the story. But the point I was getting at is I've never been what I would call a religious person. I've never belonged to a a particular practicing religion. I've never, done any of that. But I am what I would consider a very spiritual person.
Spiritual, yeah.
I believe in a higher power. I believe that there's more than just this physical life. I've just seen too much and felt too much and experienced too much in my life not to believe that. One review said something about, I have a hard time reading this kind of books, without them being too preachy. And I don't believe this book is preachy at all. I think I don't think that at all. I mean, there are a lot of things going on that have absolutely nothing to do with this, with the church or with religion. But that is part of it. That's all part of the story. But I'm getting off track here.
It's not given in a way that's preachy in a religious way. I mean, Ennis, he's a healer. He's a healer, and that's more of a spiritual faith. I mean, does it have to be a faith in a higher power, God, in the religious sense? Well, maybe for the purpose of the story. But for anybody else out there, I mean, like you said, there is a lot of mysterious, magical things that happen that are totally unexplainable. And, we don't have to really put a definition, some type of a title or tag on it to validate what Ennis is. Yeah, exactly.
That's where it gets corrupted, is when you try to put those labels and tags on these things.
Without giving away much of the story, but what I found interesting in the story in regards to the religious properties of your story would be the minister, the pastor, who comes to the home and has doubts himself about what's happening. And I just see that as being kind of related to what might happen even in today's time when something like this occurs. And I really liked the way you flavored the book, where you didn't really just go all religion. And it's not really, like you say, it's not really related to that at all. It's about a little boy who has a very special power in how the parents try to protect him, even when they know he is special. So I was wondering, Peggy, where did you spend most of your time writing Fireflies, and how did you get in the mood? We've talked about this on past shows. A lot of people play music. A lot of people like quiet. A lot of people go to a coffee house. What do you do, and where do you go?
I go on my couch in the living room and pray that nobody comes in. Normally, I have a 17-year-old son and my husband that live here with me, and my son, he works, but he graduated this year, he's working, and he has a lovely girlfriend, and they, they come in and out, and they're going here and going there. And I'm all, so I always sit there and I just tell everybody, I'm going to write. And they'll pop
their
head in and they see me sitting there. They see me sitting there at the laptop. They'll stick their head in. Are you writing?
What type of laptop do you have, Peggy? We always ask the writers here in the show what type of laptop they use.
I have it's a secondhand Dell, because I was using my son's laptop. I actually used my son's laptop to write Fireflies, but the cord broke, or we didn't know what was wrong with that. And so I went and got this secondhand Dell, and I've had that. My husband got it for me for Christmas, and I've had that since November, December of last year. Because I actually was working on another novel, which is on like 3/4 of the way done, which I might get that one finished when this one goes to the editor. The new book goes to the editor, because I really want to get that one finished too. And then
Imagine that, Robin. Somebody who writes a novel.
I know.
I've taken 3 years, and I'm still not done with mine.
Oh.
I love how she, before, earlier, when she's like, oh, I wrote it in like 6 weeks, and but the research took longer. And I'm like, the research took longer. I understand. Yeah, I totally get that. But writing it in 6 weeks, I don't get that. My friend Eric Shulman, we've had him on, and he's able to do the same thing where he treats it like a business. He sits down, he gets right to it, and he dedicates X amount of time to writing, and I'm not like that. I know it's been more than 5 years. I think it's like 6, 7 years, 8 years. I've lost track of count of however many years it's been. I'm still.
I think I'm just so conditioned.
I admire people like you.
I'm just so conditioned that I'm a results oriented person. Always have been. I always like anything that
Good
I start
you.
Is at a beginning, a middle, and an end. I don't like any open ended things. And, I mean, right now the biggest open-ended thing is my house because it's a wreck. I say it's a wreck. Everybody else come in and say, your house looks fine. You know, I try to, you know, keep clean at least twice a month, you know, and then throughout the month pick up and dust and whatnot. But luckily I don't have a very big house, so it's not that big of a deal. But to me it is. But that's the only open-ended thing, but I can live with it. I can deal with it. But as far as, you know, time managing my time, I'm really good at that. Really good at that.
I tell myself,
when I get home from work at 5:20, you know, my husband was laid off back in April. He's still trying to find a job, which is really a drag. But at least having him home, I mean, he does all the laundry, does all the cooking, you know. So I come home from work, I'm able to eat dinner. You know, maybe he and I talk for about an hour or whatever. But I still get my granddaughter, my 3-year-old granddaughter, I get her usually on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Friday evenings. And then she goes home at about 8:30. So after that, it's my time. And although when I'm really, really up to my eyeballs writing, sometimes I only get 4 or 5 hours sleep a night. And it's a little rough, you know, because being an office manager during the day, but somehow or another, I've got myself trained to live like that until a book is done. And when the book is done, which I finished it last week, I thought I was just going to die. I was like, wait a minute, is this the end?
The
end of this book. I cannot believe I did it. I mean, because I looked up and it was 95,000 words on the screen, and I was like, wait a minute. I'm done.
Yep. Wow.
You know, and it was not the word count. It was the story was done. And,
that's
you know,
a great feeling, I would imagine, huh, Robin?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was ready.
And that's one thing my publisher, she's always telling me that don't focus on word count so much because the story's going to take as many words as it needs to take to be told.
Yes. And
so
you know what?
If it's 100-something thousand words, it'll be that, but...
Right, because I'm going through now, and I'm going through the whole story again. I call it rewriting the book, but it's not rewriting the book. Going through and going
revision,
back through and
yeah.
right, and I'm doing all that,
cleaning it up,
all that before I send it to the real editor. Just to make sure.
Peggy, I want to jump in here a little bit. We've only got about 6 minutes left here, and I got a couple
I'm
more
sorry,
questions.
I'm sorry, I'm going on and on.
It's okay. Is there anything about the story that you would change, and are you happy with the publishing aspects of getting your work out into the world?
I would absolutely not change anything. I mean, sometimes I look at it and I think, oh, I really wish I would have talked about this. Or I really wish I would have talked about that. Because there were some things that I cut out because I thought, you know, they're really not important to the story. But honestly, nah, I wouldn't change a thing. And as far as the publishing aspect, I'm working with Kitty at GMTA has been a wonderful experience. She's so supportive. Amber Rendon, who's the cover artist of the book. Look, the cover of this book is absolutely gorgeous. The first try, I just told her what I wanted, and you know, she sent this to me, and I mean, I had tears in my eyes. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. This is what I was seeing in my mind, you know?
Yeah.
And all of it has just been great. I mean, it really has. And I want to, again, say thank you, Tom, for saying what you said about you know, the top five and all that. And, I mean, actually this past month, sales have really been terrible, but I'm not going to let that, I don't let that bother me
for
at
everybody.
All.
Because,
yeah, I don't let that bother me at all because I know and I feel and I've felt, and this is one thing I will say, is the entire time I was writing this book and the entire time I was sending out query letters and you know, and chapter, you know, thing and whatnot to publishers and agents, and the entire time I did that, not once did it ever enter my mind that this book would not be published.
That's
not
good.
Once.
Mm-hmm. Peggy, we're pretty much close to the end here. I'd like you to tell us where everybody can find you on the Internet.
Okay. I always have to refer to my papers because I can't remember everything exactly. On Twitter, you can find me at P.S. Bartlett. Facebook, P.S. Bartlett. You can find me on WordPress at psbartlett.wordpress.com. That's where my crazy blog is. It's life, it's writing, it's a little bit of everything. I also have a book trailer on YouTube if you'd like to see that. And everything is under P.S. Bartlett. If you Google P.S. Bartlett, you'll either get antique watches or you'll get me. So,
I really enjoyed you on the program. It's been a great interview. I'm going to listen to it again, and I'm going to read your next book, which is the prequel, and I can't wait for that. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Can I say something really fast? I wanted to announce the name of the prequel tonight.
Yes, go ahead.
Oh.
The name of the prequel is going to be Hope from the Ocean.
Oh, cool.
And if you look that up, you'll find out that that comes from an old Irish immigrant proverb. So there
you
go.
Thank you very much,
okay.
Peggy.
Nice.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Oh, bye. Great talking to you.
Great talking to you guys.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Robin, I got to really rush here to get through the program to the end here. The next book that we'd like to promote here on the promotion would be The Price of Power by Trent Sweeney. We had him on in the last show. Michael Stratford has no idea that on that stormy day in October, he would meet a girl that will change his life forever and plunge him into the alternate world of magic and power. And that's, once again, The Price of Power by Trent Sweeney. Go ahead and Google it, and you'll find it. And Robin, real quick, what is it we normally say here at the end of our show every time?
As we say from us here at the Writer's Lounge, good reading and good writing. Good night, everybody.
See you next time.
In the middle of the day, your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out wind, and it looks like it's rainbow weather again. One beautiful morn, he said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. It's rainbow weather. Yeah, it looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun peeking. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather. Thank you.